Today's topic is Herod the Great, Ruthless Tyrant and Master Builder. Just as a quick review, again, the Hanukkah story takes place 164 BCE. Yehuda Maccabee dies 4 years later. His brother Jonathan takes over. And about 140 BCE, he establishes independence for the kingdom of Judea. He dies. He's murdered. His brother Shimon takes over. Shimon is killed, and his son Yochanan Hyrcanus, John Hyrcanus, takes over. John Hyrcanus dies, and his son Alexander Yanai, after a year, someone else rules, but Alexander Yanai becomes the ruler about 104, 103 BCE, and his wife takes over after him. And after she dies, she has two sons, Hyrcanus, Aristobulus. They quarrel over the leadership, and Rome gets involved. And in 63 BCE, Rome comes in. Rome appoints Hyrcanus as the leader, but Judea is required now to pay tribute to Rome. Aristobulus's family tries to start rebellions, but Hyrcanus, even though he is the Kohen Gadol, he is essentially Antipater's puppet. Antipater was a very important individual from a member of the Idumeans. They were the kingdom, or they're the group of people that John Hyrcanus forcibly converted. So here's Antipater, who's really running the show. Antipater, though, was poisoned, and Aristobulus's youngest son, Matisseo Antigonus, rebels against Hyrcanus. And Antipater's two sons, Phasael and Herod, together with and together with the Parthians, Aristobulus's son sort of forces Herod to flee to Rome. Hyrcanus's ear is cropped, so he can no longer be the Kohen Gadol. Phasael commits suicide. Herod escapes to Rome. Rome intervenes on his behalf. Antigonus is defeated and killed, and Herod, a loyal ally of Rome, becomes the king. This takes place in 37 BCE. And now Herod has full control of Eretz Yisrael. The borders of the kingdom of Herod were determined by the needs of the Roman rulers, first by Mark Antony and then by Augustus Caesar. The Roman rulers approved of Herod because they found him strong, capable of preserving the existing order, and at the same time, completely loyal to and dependent upon Rome. Additionally, it made sense for a Jew to rule Eretz Yisrael because Jews formed the majority of the population of Eretz Yisrael. It would also be seen as a goodwill gesture to the Jews. Herod enjoyed all the trappings of royalty that developed in the Hellenistic East and bore the title of an ally of the Roman people. Practically, though, his hands were tied in all matters of political importance, and particularly in the sphere in which political independence is characteristically reflected, i.e., foreign policy. Herod's foreign policy was essentially the Roman foreign policy. Now, while Antony was the Roman ruler, Herod had to contend with Cleopatra. Cleopatra had been offered parts of Eretz Yisrael by Antony and had her designs in the kingdom of Judea. Additionally, Herod clashed with the Nabatean Arabs in 31 BCE, but in 30 BCE, he won a decisive victory over them, and the Romans saw how powerful and valuable Herod was in that part of the Roman kingdom. After Augustus defeated Antony, he confirmed Herod as the king of Judea in 30 BCE and enlarged his domain. Eventually, Herod gained control over almost all of Eretz Yisrael, with the exception of Ashkelon and the coastal belt north of the Carmel. Essentially, the Jewish kingdom became what it had become under Alexander Yanai. Herod's position was consolidated by his personal relations that he developed with the heads of the Roman state and an intricate network of contacts with the leaders of Roman society from Augustus himself downward. Herod built a number of cities and named them after Roman leaders. Herod also became a good friend to Agrippa, who was Augustus's right hand. When Herod took over in 37 BCE, the old system of Jewish leadership was lost. The traditional Sanhedrin lost any power, and Herod set up his own Sanhedrin that was not connected with the Hasmonean past, and in which all important affairs of state were discussed. The state of the high priesthood of the Kohen Gadol lost much of his prestige. Herod was not a Kohen, so he surrendered this position to those who did not have ties to the Hasmonean past, and who would owe him a debt of gratitude for the distinction that he conferred upon them. Herod's royal court was similar to the royal court of other Hellenistic rulers, and many of his principal ministers were of Greek descent. His entourage included some of the luminaries of the Greek literature of the day. Best known among them was Nicholas of Damascus, the historian. The tutor of the king's sons, his bodyguard and secretary, were also foreigners. Herod was favored by the diaspora Jews as he used his contacts to influence Roman leadership. So, for example, when a serious dispute developed over the rights of the Jews in the cities of Asia Minor, and the issue was left for Agrippa to decide, Agrippa ruled in favor of the Jews. However, Herod hardly used any restraint in ruling his own subjects. His only limitation was the concern that his people would revolt against him, which in turn would diminish his prestige in the eyes of the Romans. Generally, Herod succeeded in keeping the peace in his kingdom through an iron fist, timely concessions, police supervision, and preferential treatment of the social elements dependent on him for their social and economic status. Josephus writes a lot about Herod. I'm going to read to you a passage from Josephus of the War, Book 1, where he describes some of the intrigues that take place during the reign of Herod. And Josephus writes, "However, fortune was avenged on Herod in his eternal great successes by raising him up domestic troubles, and he began to have wild disorders in his family on account of his wife, of whom he was so very fond." So Josephus writes that there are going to be problems with Herod's wife. "For when he came to the government, he sent away her whom he had before married when he was a private person and who was born at Jerusalem, whose name was Doris." So I guess when Herod, before he became king, he married a woman named Doris. But after he got married, after he became king, he sent Doris away and married Mariam, the daughter of Alexander, the son of Aristobulus. So Mariam was the great-granddaughter of Alexander, Yana, and Shlomsion Hamalka. She was the granddaughter of Aristobulus, and she also happened to have been the granddaughter of Hyrcanus. Turned out that Hyrcanus and Aristobulus' children married each other, so their cousins married each other, and they had a child named Mariam. Mariam was married to Herod, and the Josephus writes that Herod first expelled Antipater, the son of Doris, out of the city. And then he slew his wife's grandfather, Hyrcanus, the great Hyrcanus, whose ear was chopped off. But now he was killed by Herod when he was returned out of Parthia to him under this pretense that he suspected him of plotting against him. Now this Hyrcanus had been carried captive to Barzapharnes when he overran Syria. But those of his own country beyond the Euphrates were desirous that he would stay with them, and this out of the commiseration they had for his condition. Hyrcanus was an old man. So Josephus writes that basically his people wanted him to stay in Bavel on the other side of the Euphrates. And he had complied with their desires when they had exhorted him not to go over to the river to Herod. He had not perished, but the marriage of his granddaughter to Herod was his temptation. For as he relied upon him and was over fond of his own country, he came back to it. So Josephus writes that Hyrcanus was doing fine in the eastern side of the Euphrates and in Bavel. However, with the Parthians. However, once his granddaughter Mariam gets married to Herod, Hyrcanus is invited back and he comes to Eretz Yisrael. So why does Herod kill Hyrcanus? Herod's provocation was this: not that Hyrcanus made any attempt to gain the kingdom, but that it was fitter for him to be their king than for Herod. Why does Herod want to kill Hyrcanus? Because the people think that Hyrcanus is more fitting to be a king because he comes from the Hashmonaim than does Herod. Hyrcanus has no designs to be king, but Herod is just jealous of him, so he hasn't killed. Now, Josephus mentions that he was infatuated with Mariam. But, writes Josephus, Mariam's hatred to him was not inferior to his love for her. In other words, she hated him so much. Why did she hate him? Josephus writes, she had indeed but too just a cause of indignation for what he had done. while her boldness proceeded from his affection to her. So she openly reproached him with what he had done to her grandfather Hyrcanus and to her brother Aristobulus, for he had not spared this Aristobulus, though he were but a child. So she criticized him. She criticized the great Herod that he killed Hyrcanus, her grandfather, and also she killed her brother. Then also that Herod killed her brother Aristobulus. So what happened with Aristobulus? Why was he killed? So Josephus writes, for when he had given him the high priesthood at the age of 17, he slew him quickly after he had conferred the dignity upon him. But when Aristobulus had put on the holy vestments and had approached to the altar at a festival, the multitude and great crowds fell into tears. So what happened? Aristobulus was made Kohen Gadol by Herod, and the people loved Aristobulus. They loved this Kohen Gadol. The crowds were in tears, and Herod got very, very jealous. Just like he was jealous of Hyrcanus, he was jealous of this 17-year-old boy, Aristobulus. Whereupon, writes Josephus, the child was sent by night to Jericho and was there dipped by the Gauls at Herod's command in a pool till he was drowned. So here, of course, Miriam, in response, she reproaches Herod and his sister and mother after a most scornful manner. So Miriam is no friend of Herod. She's married to him, but she reproaches him. She reproaches Herod's sister. She reproaches Herod's mother. And in response, so the sister claims that she was cheating on him because they thought that would get Herod jealous. Meanwhile, Herod is forced to appear before Antony to answer to the charges of having murdered Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. And before he leaves, Josephus writes, when therefore he was about to take a journey abroad, he committed his wife to Joseph, his sister Salome's husband, as to one who would be faithful to him and bear him goodwill on account of their kindred. He also gave him a secret injunction that if Antony slew him, he should slay her. So again, Herod had Herod's sister's husband, Joseph. So Herod takes Joseph aside and says, if I don't come back alive, I want you to kill my wife, Miriam. Because if I cannot have her, then I don't want anyone else to have her. Josephus continues to write that Joseph felt very bad. And he tells Miriam what Herod has planned for her. Meanwhile, Herod flatters Antony, so he's found innocent. He comes back and he professes his love to Miriam. And then she responds, as Josephus writes, yes, she says, oh, thou didst to be sure demonstrate thy love to me by the injunctions thou gave Joseph when thou commanded him to kill me. She says to him, oh, you love me so much. You love me so much that you told your own brother-in-law to have me killed. Once Herod hears this, he says there's no way that Joseph would have disclosed this information to her unless he had debauched her, unless he had an affair with her. And Josephus writes, his passion also made him stark mad, and leaping out of his bed, he ran about the palace after a wild manner, at which time his sister Salome took the opportunity also to blast her reputation and confirm his suspicion about Joseph. So Salome, this was Herod's sister, admitted that it said that, yeah, probably Joseph, who was her husband, probably did have an affair with your wife Miriam. And what happened, writes Josephus, whereupon out of his ungovernable jealousy and rage, he commanded both of them to be slain immediately. So he has both Salome's husband Joseph killed and also his wife who he loved, Miriam, killed. And Josephus writes, but as soon as ever his passion was over, he repented of what he had done. And as soon as his anger was worn off, his affections were kindled again. And indeed, the flame of his desires for her was so ardent that he could not think she was dead. He couldn't imagine, writes Josephus, that she was dead. He was so despondent over the fact that he had her killed. And Josephus writes that she would appear under his disorders to speak to her as if she were alive. So this was very devastating for Herod. But he kills his wife, Miriam. He kills his brother-in-law. And the truth is that he had at least three sons. He had this son Antipater from his wife Doris. He had two sons. He had three sons, but one died early from Mariam. He had two other sons, Alexander Aristobulus. All three were executed by their father on charges of conspiring against him, Antipater, only a few days before Herod's death in 4 BCE. He also wiped out the entire Hasmonean dynasty. And according to the Ramban, this was a punishment for the Hasmonean dynasty referring to themselves as kings, since they were not from Sheva Yehuda. The Ran disagrees, but that is the Ramban's position. The Gemara also tells the story of Herod. In Aramaic, he's called Hordus. And there's a Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Gimel Amud Beis who tells the story how Hordus was Abdad the Beis Chashmonai Ava. He was a slave in the house of the Chashmonai. Nasan Eina Bosa Tinokos. He had his eye on one young girl. Yomachad Shama Hu Gavar Bas Kala Damar Kol Abdad the Marid Hashta Matzlach. He heard a baskal, a voice from heaven saying that any slave who rebels against his master will now be successful. Kam Katlinu Lachule Maruso Veshaira Lahi Yanuksa. He kills everyone, all his masters, and he leaves only this young girl. He chazes Hahi Yanuksa the cowboy Laminsve. He wants to marry her. Slikal Igra Varama Kala. This girl, who presumably is Mariam, at least with the Gemara's version, she leaps up to the roof. Varama Kala, and she calls out, Amra, she said, she says, anyone who says they are from the house of the Chashmonaim, they are really slaves because I'm the only one left. And she jumps from the roof to her death. The Gemara continues and tells us that he preserved her body in honey for 7 years, and there's a debate in the Gemara whether he had relations with her or merely that he wanted to preserve her so that people would say he married a king's daughter. Hordu said, who's the one who said, Man Dorish Miker Vachecha Tosim Alecha Melech? Who's the one who expounds the pasuk that says that you can only have a king over the Jewish people if you are from amongst your people? But you cannot be a freed slave or a convert. The Rabbanon, the rabbis are the one. They're the ones who say I can't be king. So the Gemara says he killed all the rabbis except for Bava Ben Buta, who he blinded. And then he pretends, according to the Gemara, that he's just an average, ordinary person, and he speaks to Bava Ben Buta, and Bava Ben Buta does not know that it's Herod because he's blind. And basically, Herod tries to get Bava Ben Buta to say nasty things about the king. But Bava Ben Buta basically says that he does not want to curse the king. You're not supposed to. And even if he wasn't the king and he's still a rich man, I would not curse him. Even if he's only a leader, I would not curse him. And Herod is so impressed with the fact that Bava Ben Buta is unwilling to curse the king. And he says that had I known that Chazal were so cautious, I would not have killed them. So they want to know what's the remedy. And Bava Ben Buta basically tells him the remedy is what? Rebuild the base Hamikdash. And the Gemara depicts Herod as a man who lusted after his wife. And he killed her, and he killed a lot of rabbis, but he feels bad. And then he rebuilt the base Hamikdash in a nicer way, as a way to compensate for killing the rabbis. The Jews actually were very nervous to have their mikdash, their temple, pulled down, fearing lest it might not be rebuilt. To demonstrate his good faith, Herod accumulated the materials for the new building before the old one was taken down. The new temple, the new mikdash, was rebuilt as rapidly as possible, being finished most of it for a year and a half, although work was in progress on the outbuildings in the courts for 80 years. As it was unlawful for any but the Kohanim to enter the Mikdash, Herod employed 1,000 of them as masons and carpenters. Historians say that this reconstruction started around 20 BCE and lasted about 10 years. And Josephus writes that that Herod did this not because to make up for killing the rabbis, but because he was interested in perpetuating his name through building projects. The Kol HaMaravi that we go visit when we go to Yerushalayim, it's part of the retaining wall around the Temple Mount to support a large man-made platform for the Jews who came for the Aliyah L'Regel once every three times a year to stand. This doubled the he doubled the size of the platform on which the temple stood, on which the Mikdash stood. There was an atmosphere of suspicion, intrigue, and executions, which often cast a cloud over the external splendor and material success that Herod enjoyed throughout most of his life. He excelled every Jewish ruler of the Second Temple area as a builder of magnificent cities and structures in the Roman style. He founded Caesarea. He also improved and beautified Masada. Yerushalayim became one of the most magnificent capitals in the entire East. And as I mentioned, he also reconstructed the Mikdash. In short, Herod was a powerful king. Herod was a strong military ruler, an ally of Rome, a clever politician, a cruel tyrant, a master builder, and a Hellenistic leader who destroyed the Hasmonean state and various forms of leadership associated with it, for example, the Sanhedrin and the high priesthood. But that's not to say that during his time, that the Jewish people were without leadership, because there was a great leader, a great rabbinic sage who lived around his time that we will discuss next time, and his name was Hillel HaZakeh.